Our series, Meet Your Mind, A User's Guide to the Science of Consciousness, is supported by Promega Corporation, providing tools and technologies for research in life science, and the Knorr Foundation, exploring meaning and commonality of human experience.
Do you think your memory's like a movie camera? Or a tape recorder? A device that can record and store every experience you've ever had so that years later you can pull up your 10th birthday party, remember the candles and the cake, who was there, what you did? Historian Alison Winter believes most of us use technology metaphors to think about memory. And as technology changes, so do our ideas about how memory works. Anne Strainchamps talks with Alison about her new book, Memory, Fragments of a Modern History.
Alison, is the way we think now about memory very different from how people thought about it maybe 100 years ago?
It is. I think that our values relating to memory are changing now in a way that's really very remarkable. There's a new, maybe you would say, a sort of a model for how to value memory and how not to value it, that's coming into play at the moment. Being able to move past some memory and never have access to it again might be good for us.
What is this new model?
So since the 70s, at least, it's been commonly understood that when you have a new experience or you learn something, that information has to become consolidated in the brain, stored. At that time, it was assumed that the memories were just there. They were a permanent part of your brain. But in the late 90s and in the last decade, new research has indicated that when a memory is called to consciousness and the parts of the brain where the memory is stored are activated, that information has to be consolidated again. And it's possible to alter that memory, or at least certain features of the memory.
Sort of as though if the memory is a tape recorder, there's no such thing as just playback. You're always hitting play and record at the same time, you know, so that whenever you play, you're also potentially recording something new.
Yes, and that's one of the things that I think is really fascinating about the technology metaphors. The metaphor that I've heard people use more often is it's like calling a file up on your computer. If you call up a word process document on your computer, as you're reading it, you might see some typos or some infelicities that you want to change, and then you save it.
So you're constantly updating.
Yes, constantly updating. Of course, the same is true of digital images. This work on the brain has happened during the same period when people switched from the film camera to the digital camera and became adept at altering digital photographs. So I have thousands of photographs of my kids, and I've cropped them and tweaked the color or the lighting. So those files that I've kept permanently are the edited ones, not the originals.
This leads into thinking about how to deal with unwanted memories or memories that are difficult or painful. I mean, until fairly recently, the idea was that people with traumatic memories, veterans say, need to talk about those memories, that the act of catharsis would, you know, purge the trauma. But I think there's a new picture emerging now, correct?
Absolutely. The new memory therapists say if you can find some way of truly forgetting some aspect of your traumatic memory, great. It's not going to bother you anymore. What they're able to do now is to take certain drugs. The ones I know about are beta blockers. I don't know if there are other ones that people have come up with, which inhibit the release of stress hormones. And they give these to people and then they have them remember the traumatic event. But the purpose of that act of remembering is not to better understand the event. It's to alter the emotional memory associated with the event. So when that memory is reconsolidated, the idea is that the stress hormones that are triggered by the memory will be altered so that the next time the memory is relived, those stress hormones won't be released, at least not in the original level.
Well, I've seen this talked about in the press as drugs that will erase, quote unquote, erase memories. That doesn't exactly sound like what you're describing.
No, that's an exaggeration as far as I've understood it. But it's also an example of that technological metaphor. What's tempting is to think, oh, well, we can erase the file.
Sure, it's or like we, hitting the delete button.
Yeah, or we can Photoshop out part of the memory. But maybe it is a little bit like Photoshop in the sense that you can soften the emotional response.
But isn't there something creepy about this? Because isn't, you know, what if you have an entire army of people who've committed wartime atrocities and you bring them home and give them these drugs and they remember the atrocities, but they don't care?
Some people will say it's creepy and other people will say, how can you be so precious about this? People who are suffering and want relief from their psychic suffering now have a tool. An interesting moment of comparison is the history of anesthesia, because I think we're at a similar moment to the invention of anesthesia. Before about the 1840s, almost nobody had recourse to anything besides a bit of alcohol, maybe, when they had a surgical operation. But in the 1840s, inhalation anesthetics came into wide use. Before they existed, the idea of anesthesia was deeply troubling.
Why? What would be troubling about anesthesia?
The problem was, before the inhalation anesthetics, there were people who claimed to be able to suspend sensation and consciousness. They were mesmerists who were like the precursors to hypnotists. And they claimed that they could induce a trance that would put you in a sensory state where you couldn't feel an operation taking place. And there were very violent controversies over mesmerism, because the very idea that you could put somebody into a state of suspended sensibility was a moral outrage. One editor of a leading medical journal said, you mustn't, not that you can't, but you mustn't believe these claims. Because if they were true, the teeth could be pulled from your head and you wouldn't even be aware. Now, nowadays,
we would like our teeth pulled without being aware of it.
Exactly. We're living in a post-anesthesia period. But to this guy, he didn't even have to explain what he meant. Consciousness and sensibility in the sense of fully experiencing every sensory event was a really integral part of oneself. And if you could suspend that, especially if another person could do something to you that would suspend it, that there was something deeply troubling that undermined our authenticity of ourselves.
So are you suggesting a parallel to the new drugs that might erase bad memories? In a way, you know, we're pulling a bad tooth.
We are at the beginning of a psychic anesthesia age. I mean, the difference, of course, is that anesthesia is temporary and these memory therapies aren't. But a thing I think is compelling about the comparison is that these new treatments raise huge problems of the self that have to do with the relationship of pain, psychic pain, and personal authenticity. And those guys who were worrying about anesthesia in the 1830s, if they could have got into a time machine and just zapped themselves into the 1850s, they would have been stunned at the fact that, you know, Queen Victoria was delivering her children using chloroform and that everybody was happy about it.
Alison Winter is a historian at the University of Chicago and the author of Memory, Fragments of a Modern History. She spoke with Anne Strangehamps.